Today, we're looking at how relationships between generations can affect Asian American identity and mental health. Many Americans grow up with family members who've migrated to the U.S. after severe trauma. Poet Monica Sook is one of them.
My mother doesn't dwell in the past, so she smiles and shakes her head when I ask about her life during the Khmer Rouge regime.
That's Sook reading from an essay she wrote called On Fear, Fearlessness, and Intergenerational Trauma. That's what researchers call it when the effects of a significant negative experience are passed on to generations after.
Mom, what did you do? Did you have to work? She shrugs. Her eyes are soft, then perplexed by my eagerness to bear witness to her story.
In the Bay Area, younger Cambodian Americans with families who survived the genocidal Khmer Rouge in the 1970s are beginning to talk openly about this trauma and how to move past it. KLW's Geraldine Asu tells us more.
I'm with Philip Rama, a first-generation Cambodian American. We're in the kitchen of his childhood home in Susun City, where he now lives with his grandparents.
So this is soup. It has like, what do they call it? Mustard, green mustard, and some riblets.
The house is remarkably quiet.
It's good to see my grandparents and stay with my grandparents. But here, I'm staying in the living room. I don't have my own room. So that's the only downside.
But living with his grandparents is nothing new for Rama. They raised him and always told him stories.
I remember ever since I came to live with them in third grade, I'd sit by the couch and they would talk about all these stories of the war.
Ye, whose given name is Mao Ong Rama, and her husband Sivaram Rama, came to the U.S. in 1980. They're survivors of the Khmer Rouge, the genocidal dictatorship that ruled Cambodia in the 1970s.
This is NBC Nightly News with John Chancellor and David Brinkley.
When the Khmer Rouge marched victoriously into Phnom Penh, no one knew how they would rule Cambodia.
I have a nightmare every day.
That's Rama's grandfather, who he calls Da.
From 40 years, I still have a nightmare until now. Sweating in the morning and try no sleep until morning.
The Khmer Rouge came to power in 1975 after the violence of the Vietnam War led to a Cambodian civil war. Pol Pot, the Khmer Rouge's leader, marked his victory by declaring it year zero, a new beginning. At first, Da says people celebrated, believing that this was the beginning of a peaceful era. But soon after, the regime started evacuating cities, separating families, and corralling people into forced labor camps.
The country's borders were quickly sealed. In time, bits of information emerged, stories of terror and death.
They say like, if your dad do something wrong, you have to kill. If your mom do something wrong, then you have to kill. Why they do that? To wash the brain.
The regime was driven by visions of extreme nationalism and ethnic purity. People were openly beaten, tortured, starved, and killed. Da remembers one time when he saw a professor steal some corn to eat, even though he knew the regime would notice.
I said, oh man, when they saw and then that's it, you'll be killed, you know, anything stole, steal, I kill, you know.
So he asked the man, why did you steal?
Oh, adieu, he said adieu. Adieu in French is goodbye forever.
The Khmer Rouge stayed in power for 4 years. By the end of their regime, more than 2 million people were dead. That's about 25% of Cambodia's population at that time.
With the population that comes here as refugees, there are a lot of stories about loss.
Rumani Hong is a community health specialist who works with the Southeast Asian population in Oakland.
It's not normal that it is so prominent in your life, but then it becomes something that you just think is a part of your life.
Hong says while stories like Da's are painful to hear, hearing them is exactly what might help survivors and their descendants to heal.
For some people, it does help to talk about some of the things that we've gone through. There's something about actually hearing it out loud and the vulnerability that comes with it that, you know, folks want to listen to you.
But these memories are painful to share, so silence is often the default. And Hong says if elders stay silent, their children and grandchildren learn to do that too.
If you are seeing and learning how to not talk about things that are bothering you, then, you know, you'll start to kind of internalize those types of behaviors as well and thinking that that's okay.
A generation of people suppressing pain can lead to many different problems. A report published in 2013 found that Cambodian American youth had one of the highest arrest rates for Asian Pacific Islanders in Oakland. And in 2014, the U.S. Census reported that nearly a third of Cambodian Americans did not complete high school. But healing is possible, and it's happening in community, across generations, in lots of different ways.
I'm so Khmer, I eat bai with thanks to you.
Let's go to it.
Rama, together with RJ Sin, Vannery Jim, and Rumani Hong, are Project Prolific, a performing arts group that explores the Khmer American identity. It's a Thursday evening, the workday's through, and they're sitting on the couch at Vannery and RJ's apartment, eating a late dinner, and rehearsing ideas for their upcoming show.
I'm so Khmer, I...
I'm on the outside of this joke, but what I can see is a home amongst friends. A home of people who feel comfortable questioning, asking, remembering, and creating something new.
A lot of times we hear our grandparents, our parents that came as refugees, until this day, they often say, oh, you have to know your history, you have to preserve your culture, keep the culture alive. But more recently, I started thinking about, what does that mean? What does preserving your culture mean? What does keeping your culture alive mean?
These questions seem central, not just to first and second generations of Cambodian Americans, but to older generations as well. 40-plus years after the rise of the Khmer Rouge, what does it mean to be Cambodian in America today, to have survived, and to now be together? Every April, a Cambodian New Year festival takes place in Oakland. Traditionally, it's a time that marks the end of the harvest, before the rainy season comes, when people get together to celebrate. There's music and dance, and people are getting ready to play a traditional Khmer game, a kind of tug-of-war between the sexes. It's my first time here, and I see people across generations laughing, playing, and talking to each other. And, as Hong says, this kind of intergenerational connection is a good way to start reconciling the past in order to help inform the future.
It's really trying to understand what our parents and our grandparents have gone through so that we can kind of situate ourselves and see where we stand in this world and why it is the way it is.
I'm reminded of writer Monica Sook when she asks, who can be fearless confronting the history of genocide? Here, together now, people look fearless. For Cross Currents, I'm Geraldine Asu.